earthquakes, lightning, pouring rain, tornadoes, tsunamis, and a hurricane. Killer.
So it's Kat's birthday. This is a special birthday episode.
Hey.
She was just about to tell me about her dinner, but I want to hear about her entire birthday.
Oh, you're so sweet. Yeah, I am so happy to spend my birthday night with you on the podcast. Mm-hmm. I know, it's awesome. No, my birthday was great. I went to spin this morning and everyone was so cool. I got some birthday shout outs during class. That was really cute.
So you're like on the spin bike and they're like, yeah.
They're like, we got a birthday in the house. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like dying and sweating.
Like a DJ. Which,
yeah. So I'm in this like March Madness competition and I have been all month. Mm-hmm. And I haven't had a break from spin in like 16 days, even though it's the 22nd. I started a little late, but like usually I take days off and I haven't had a day off. So it's been really like challenging, but it's been really fun.
Is it the same experience for you every time? Like, do you notice getting in better shape from it, or is it?
Oh, I'm dying every time.
Yeah. It's hard, right? Don't you have to like balance on the pedals and like, you have to like pedal up and down?
So like, yeah, there's like dance moves. You have to like do dance moves with your upper body. So
impressive.
Like you put like a lot of resistance on, you know, your legs so that you can get up and like not be like touching the handlebars sometimes. Like sometimes you're doing like a crisscross, uh-huh. If that makes sense. It's great.
Don't you get screamed at aggressively if you like don't do what the instructor is telling you or something?
Never. Not at this place.
Oh, really?
Maybe in some places. No, this place is so amazing. I'm obsessed with all of them. They're like so encouraging. Like every time you come out of there, you're like, oh my God.
Do you go in the front row or the
like, so middle? I've been avoiding the front row, but then I've been coming so much that teachers like are like, hey, move up to the front. And I'm like, really? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, I don't think you want me up there, because like you do end up watching the people in front of you to see what they're doing. And
it's like the superstars in the front. It's like
and they're really good. Like a fast song comes on. Like the whole goal is that you have to like go to the beat. So they'll play some like really aggressive fast songs and your feet are going so fast. And I the fast songs like always get me, but I had a teacher, Julia, shout out. She like moved me to the front and, she was like, oh my God, you can totally be in the front after I was done. I was like, thank you so much.
So you want to be in the front?
No.
That's so like you, by the way, to be like, thank you so much for this thing I don't even want. Because you're so sweet. You're like, you.
Well, I mean, it was a challenge. It was like a cool challenge. So I ended up appreciating it. But it's like scary because people behind you like follow you essentially. Because like the whole point is that you're like going with the whole group of the, you're going with the energy of the whole group. So like you're all doing the same dance move. Right. It's kind of weird. And like the lights in this class, like they go really dark. So sometimes like you literally can just be in the dark and it's really nice. And then when the lights go on, they're like, you're like at a club. So it's kind of fun.
I took one spin class one time years ago in Portland, Oregon, when I lived there and it was dark. It was like a nightclub. But I remember when I moved the bike, I like hurt my, I like bashed it into my shin.
Oh no.
And like no one would help me like get the bike to where I needed. And it was really embarrassing.
Well, you have to be measured. Like when I first went there, like they took the time to be like, okay, you're this tall. You need like the back and the front to be this tall. Like it's a whole system. Yeah,
I would think they would help you figure out like the best seating arrangement or like how high up the seat is.
And once you know, like every time you go in, you have to adjust your bike. So like I know my measurements by heart. So that's like what should happen. But my friend Matt was like, you want to come to spin? And for the longest time, I was like, yes, but no. I was like, I'm going to die of cardiac arrest. And now I'm obsessed. So I'm doing this like competition, and it's been crazy. So I did that. So that you was did fun. That.
And then what else did you do?
I worked a little bit, and then I was like, I mean, I love you work, but I was like, I need to get a, yeah, I do love my day job, but I was like, no, I'm not feeling this. And so I went to go get a pedicure and manicure. Yeah. Love you, Nate. Sorry.
No, it's not that we don't love the company we work for, but it's like nobody like, oh my God, I don't think them. A lot of people like love work on their birthday, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, I did the important things that got them done. And then I was like, I need a pedicure and manicure. So I did that. So that was really nice.
Nice.
And then I went to yoga. Oh
my God.
I know.
So much working out.
I know. I love it though.
It's like
so
good for us.
Yeah. And I go to the Portland Power Yoga. I'm shouting out to all my people right now. It was really great. You sweat a ton. It's like 95 degrees and whatever. So that was good. And then I came back and my neighbors, they're so sweet. So I live in this like apartment building. And it's a small apartment building. It's like 12 units, but I'm really close with my neighbors. And, you know, they decorated the whole hallway with balloons and like streamers. And then like,
that's so nice.
Marielle, like my neighbor was like, hey, let's go to dinner tonight. And, you know, for me, like I'm usually with you on my birthday,
I know.
The past few birthdays. And it wasn't anything like, this month I was like, you know, I'm busy. I have like these things going on. You're like, I'm going to Florida like soon. And I was like, yeah, let's just skip it. It's cool. And I don't know. I can be very low key. And I was like actually expecting to just not do anything really. And I was like fine with it. But Marielle's like, let's go out to dinner. And there's this like Mexican place that's really cute. That is like really close by our house. And Marielle like, and I are like really good friends, but we just like never go out. Like we're always just here if we're hanging out in our apartment building. And we went to a concert once and that was funny and awesome. But yeah, anyway, so we went out to dinner and it was so cool. And then my other friend, Lori, our neighbor Lori, joined us. And oh my God, they ended up having open mic at this place. And I have never laughed so hard in my life.
You were laughing at the open mic musicians?
Oh my God. I wasn't laughing at them, but like this one guy came on and it was like he was in his bedroom writing his deepest thoughts that should have never been shared publicly ever. And I was
and playing music?
Crying. I was crying. Here's an example of what was happening. I'm not kidding.
Okay. Oh my God.
Okay. I love my girlfriend, but she's creepy. Someday I want a wife, but I know it's not meant to be. And I was like, what? I'm looking at my neighbors and they're like not facing the stage. I'm facing the stage. They're not. And they're crying, laughing. And I'm like, oh my God, this person can't see me. And then there's another song about the devil. Like, no, he was like, anybody Buffy fans out there? And I was like, you know, I've seen the show,
that's
but
so
no.
long ago that show was
so long ago. And he's like, Buffy fans. And we're like, I don't know. And then he starts singing this song and he's like, I'm gonna slay you vampires and your red eyes. You might as well go to hell or to the Vatican. And I was like, what is happening? And I lost it.
He's mixing like Buffy and Twilight, I think.
Oh my God, it was so bad. Was
are you sure this wasn't like
so
comedy?
I got the
this was like singer-songwriter.
No. This is why I don't know. This is why it was so funny, because I was like, this is a joke. But then I realized I think this is very serious and I could not tell. And so afterwards, I didn't realize that the guy was sitting right behind our table, like with his family and his mother, who the whole time was serious.
Oh, that poor family.
Oh, no, but the mother was so serious because Lori, my neighbor, was like, okay, the table behind us is like really into this. And we were like, we weren't laughing like rudely. We were just like, oh my God, what is happening?
You just said though that like they were laughing hysterically. Like you said, they were like dying laughing.
Well, we were, but we weren't like,
how do you cover like, that up?
No, she put her
head she put a napkin apron over her face. Like, that's obvious.
Oh my God. I would never like purposely like make fun of somebody, like, especially for getting up there.
Of course not. But
and like singing their guts out. But I was just like, you cannot sing these things in public. This is so, this is so bad.
He was like a grown man with his adult.
Oh yeah. And like, so afterwards he ended up sitting behind us and I was like, I had to do a shout out because I was like, oh yeah, you know me. I was like, oh my God, man, you're brave for going up there and doing that. And he was like, thank you so much. And like, you know, I play here every Tuesday. And I was like, I will be here every Tuesday. Oh my God. It was the best. It was so funny.
But you didn't like compliment him.
Yeah, I did compliment him.
No, when someone goes on stage and performs something, like whether it be comedy or music, to be like, you're so brave for doing that is not a fucking compliment.
Well, here's the thing. It was, what is it called? It was like stand-up music. It was like, open mic. Okay, so open anybody could go up there.
Yes. Yes. Open mic could be,
I love
songwriter or it could be comedy, but open mic doesn't mean comedy music. Like, was it comedy or was it like,
I still can't tell to this day.
Well, what were the other people doing? Was there stand up going on?
No, but there were some other, homemade songs. Like some guy got up there.
What's going on with you? Homemade songs.
Yeah. Some guy went up there and was like, this is a song about Maine. And like sang this like Maine song. It was like a hilarious, like the whole night was like, I didn't know what was going on. I was like, how is this happening?
So another guy was doing like funny songs. So maybe this guy was doing funny song, like
I think so.
Comedy music or something.
Yeah, but the lyrics were so like just raw and like
if this was a bit, like a stand-up bit with his song, was he playing the guitar or something?
Yeah, it was just him and the guitar. Yeah.
Okay, so that's really funny though. If he was really singing about vampires.
But then when I was like, awesome job, man. Like, you know, I was like, that was cool. Cause like, I was just like, this is the best. Cause I was just having a good time anyway. He's like, thanks. I have like 6 albums. And I was like, what? And so I got the name of it. Like, he was like, here's my name and look up my music. And so I did. And he has like, I think he has more than 6 albums. I'm like, are you joking? This just made my whole birthday. I was like, I am going to get these CDs and this is the best. Like, it was so great.
Just message
it. I don't want to say it because I don't want to like him to think.
Okay, can you message it to me right now? Yeah. And I will just Google it and I won't say his name.
Yeah.
I want to be the judge of this.
Because honestly, I think he's like an authentic like person that just like, but it was just like so raw and like I just didn't know what was happening. It was like, how is this?
We need to figure out if he's like doing comedy or if he's message it to me.
I will.
Do it right now.
What?
Message me his name right now.
All right, I already have it up.
And then I just want to react to it, but I won't.
I mean, can we play a piece on the podcast? Like, do you have that technology?
Yes, I can edit it in. But like, do you want to do that?
No, do it. It's so good.
Well, it would have to be like after we record.
That's fine.
Okay, send it to me.
I just did. Anyway, it just like made my birthday. It was like, first of all, I had no idea we were going to go see live music. And I don't know. It was great. Okay,
so still, okay. I'm looking at his website. Or his,
like, look how many albums he has. I'm not even kidding.
I can't tell from the website if this is if he's calm.
No, I don't think he was joking, B. I really don't. Well, like, that was the thing. I was like, oh, my God.
His photos, if these are serious photos, it's really
just, I just need awful. You to listen. I just need you to listen to one song. You can pick any of them and you'll know what I'm talking about. It was like, oh, my God.
But even his photos on like his hosted website on like this platform he's sharing his music on. Yeah. That I won't say there. If these are not supposed to be a joke, they have to be.
I don't think they were, V. I really don't. And like, that's why I feel really bad talking about it, because I don't want to make fun of anyone.
Oh my God. He still has a link to his MySpace. Oh my God. It comes up.
Okay, I can't. He's oh my God. Still. I'm so sorry. I feel like an awful person, because listen, like I said, it does take guts to like go up and like play your music. But to me, this is like, holy crap. So good. It was so good. Honestly, it like made my birthday. I was so like,
I'm playing his song right now just in my headphones. It won't.
Okay. Just play it.
I'm going to react.
You can edit this.
Oh my God. Who? There's like a child playing the xylophone. Oh, someone just messed up on the xylophone.
Hold on.
It's clearly his child or something.
No, there he doesn't have children.
He doesn't have children. How do you know that?
I don't know, but I don't think he does. No, seriously, give it a gander. Give it a gander. It's like,
this is horrible.
No, listen, like seeing this live, I was like, what is happening?
This can't be real.
He has like six. Okay. That's the clever part. I'm like, are you actually a super genius and you're trying to make us laugh? Because this is like so funny. But then a part of me is like, I shouldn't be laughing at this because this guy's super serious.
Okay, so I'm listening to another one where he's just using sound effects clearly on his keyboard.
Yes, in his bedroom. In his bedroom. Hold on. I need to find, actually, I know we're recording and I need to send this to you right now. And you're going to have.
It's fine. I'm just still listening to this. It's so bad.
No, I need to like, we might have to like pause this because I need you to hear.
Okay. I'm wondering if this is the song you were talking about, because it has a vampire in the title on his, I think, second to last
album. Oh my God. Yeah. The vampire. Okay. What is it called?
Well, I don't want to say the full name because maybe it'll.
Hold on, Muriel. I'm going to ask her to send me. Because she took a recording of the song we were listening to.
Okay, so I can't even. I had just paused it. The album cover is like him with like what looks like a mask you use to rob convenience stores.
Yeah, it's like really creepy.
And he's holding two guitars up in like a against a brick wall.
And like in this, and the guy on the stage was like dressed in a plaid shirt and he wore a big fanny pack.
Okay. He has a fanny pack on his like main page.
Okay. Mariel is sharing the song and I'm going to hold it up to my recording for all of you.
Okay. I don't know if we can share that.
Why not?
Because there's like copyright issues. You can't just like share stuff sometimes.
I just want to share it with you.
Well, no, we can edit it in if I need to like figure that out and look more into that because I don't want to.
I feel like people put like recordings in their podcasts all the time, but
well, it depends on how long it is. And I mean, you can try it, but.
Okay. She's going to send it to me. Anyway, he looks like we'll probably have to edit this, but
he looks like a luchador in this.
What's that?
Like a Mexican wrestler. With a mask.
Oh my God.
He does. It's like. Anyway, I don't know. I can't. I don't know if this guy is for real or if he's serious.
I don't know. But anyway, it was freaking fantastic. I was crying. I was just like,
Was anybody else in the audience laughing?
Well, okay, here's the thing. So the owner of the restaurant came up to us and he goes, yeah, we saved the best for last. And we're like, what are you talking about? As we're like laughing. And he was like, you know, the singer. And I was like, oh, okay. And he was, you know, I don't know. It was weird. Like he thought it was funny too. So I don't know if it was like a a joke or serious or what it was, but it was just so funny. I don't know. It was great.
Wow. So, like years ago when I was on a road trip with my ex-boyfriend and my brother, they met a guy in a bar in San Diego who claimed he was like this amazing musician, like singer-songwriter, and he gave them his CD. Uh-huh. And we listened to it later, and it was the worst. It was the worst thing I've ever heard. It was unreal. Like I couldn't believe this person was like, thought they were a musician. He was Australian and had like come over to the US to like try to make it big.
Yeah.
And we were dying. I mean, I know there's a lot of people in the world that, I mean, you know, that perform live and don't have talent.
I know. And like, but, you know, the guy had talent for just his lyrics. I mean, it was just,
I feel like that's not I don't think
it was so unreal.
I don't think like, he had I think you're being so nice to him, but it sounds like he just wrote super basic lyrics about vampires.
Oh God.
And rhymed them.
Oh my God. I think I'm out of liquid because I cried, laughed so hard, like not in his face, but I was just like hiding, you know,
but if a table of people were laughing that hard during a non-comedic performance by a musician, like,
well, we weren't like loud. We were just like, you know,
but you can tell like when you're in like a space, if people are like covering their lap, you know, they're laughing.
Yeah. I hope that wasn't us, man.
So, I wanted to just reflect also on like your last couple of birthdays, like really quickly.
Aww.
So last year you came to Vermont for like a literal week.
Yeah.
We didn't record any podcast.
I was supposed to come for like 3 days, but then I was like, well, I'll extend it for a week.
But you ended up staying for a week. We recorded zero podcasts, even though that would have been such a good opportunity. We wore our Killer Earth hoodies around my small town in Vermont, and people were really confused.
Yeah, that was awesome.
We went to like the only local bar. We went to a sugar house that my mom's boyfriend hangs out at because he like helps.
Yeah, and like for you guys that don't know, it's like where they make maple syrup. Yeah.
You slept pretty much every day.
Yeah. All day. Toward the end.
No, I think it was like pretty much all day every day.
Yeah. Well, we had like some, we like stayed up all night, like hanging out and drinking.
Well, but it was like I was like so happy to just have you. And I was like, you can sleep as long as much as you want.
Yeah, I did sleep a lot. Yeah.
2 years ago on your birthday was like kind of when quarantine started.
Mm-hmm.
It was like maybe a week into it or like a few days.
Yeah.
It started around like the 16th, 17th, I think, of March.
Yeah.
2020. And I was like listening to the soundtrack of Frozen in my room crying because I missed you so much. And I wrote this like really emotional like Facebook post for your birthday that I never write shit like that.
Really?
No.
2 years ago?
2 years ago.
I was with you 2 years ago.
No, last
year. Yes, I was. Kate and I came up and we did the spa.
Last year you were here. The year before that was quarantine, 2020.
That's right. I had a piece of leftover crusty pizza for my birthday. That was like, on the books for like the weirdest birthday. Yeah. Okay.
And
sorry,
I was really sad. And I kept listening to the acoustic version of some song from Frozen 2 by Casey Musgraves or whatever.
I think she was in Rent as well.
Okay. So I was listening to that over and over again because it makes me cry. And I was like typing you this emotional birthday Facebook post because I missed you so much. And it was like so uncertain what was going to happen in the world. Like nobody knew if people were going to like survive. Like people were getting sick.
That was so weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
No one had toilet paper. Cause like, you know, this time 2 years ago, I remember our last day I don't think you were still in the office, but I was still in the office. And March 16th, I remember, was the day that everyone was like not working.
I came to Portland with Lola to get her passport.
Yeah.
In February. Oh my God. Yeah. That was like the last time I had seen you.
At Best Western, where we stayed there with a pool.
Yeah. Yes. So, and then 3 years ago, you were here on your birthday?
Yeah. I came with Kate.
And you came for your birthday?
Yeah. We went to the spa.
Oh, yes. We got a hotel room in a town like half an hour from me at a Hampton Inn, and we went to this spa. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. And we got massages.
Mm-hmm.
And then I told the waiter, he was like really hot.
So we kind of got kicked out of a restaurant because you were so drunk and like hit on the waiter. And then like you went outside to smoke a cigarette and the bartender came over to our table. You and Kate went outside and the bartender came over to our table and was like, "Here's your bill. Please leave." Because your friend. And then we went swimming in the hotel pool and there was a group of children with their mom, but she like wasn't paying attention to them. She was like drinking a twisted tea, like talking on her cell phone.
Yeah.
And you were drunk and you gave them like this long lecture about life. And you mentioned like several super personal things about your life in this chat. And Kate and I were just sitting there like, oh, they weren't chill. They weren't like little. They were like teenagers, I should say. Like they were probably between like 12 and like 15.
Well, they were already like being sassy. So I was like,
no, they were dying. They were laughing. So they were like,
I was like, do you really want to know about life? You think you do now? Because I thought I did at that age. I was like,
no, you were like, you're like, go out and live your dreams. And then you don't. And then somebody ruins it. And then you got to pick yourself back up. Try that. Like you were saying spit like that. You were like, oh, you want to do that? I'm not going to even mention the personal things you said, but you're like, you want to do that? Because this is what's going to happen because it happened to me. That's what I did. And they were like, what?
You know what? I give it to you straight.
It was so funny.
Oh my God. How the times have changed.
Oh, So one of the things, we've talked about this, about how you were married before Sam and you got divorced. You were talking about that. You were like, you marry someone, you meet them, they're great. Then they turn out to be terrible and you divorce them and it ruins everything. Like you said something like that.
These kids are probably going to be like, okay.
But then the mom started listening and like was laughing at the advice you were giving. Because nothing
my advice must have been pretty good then if the mom wasn't mad at me.
I mean, it wasn't. You were definitely throwing out some things there that I probably think that age bracket, certain parents wouldn't want them to know. But like overall, you were giving them this really heartfelt like advice. Like
I always have good intentions, everyone.
Yes, you weren't.
It might be like a little cray sometimes, but no, I have good intentions.
Yeah,
I'm gonna be a good mom. I'm gonna give them to the straight when they're like seven. Be like,
oh, girl, you're going to be an amazing mom. That.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I don't remember what we did the year before that.
What did we do? I think you were still in Portland then.
Possibly. Yeah, I don't remember.
I remember your birthday, but sort of the mailboat birthday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I came to, why do you label it the mailboat birthday? It was like one of many things we did.
I know, but that was such a fun party. But that was wild.
It was after I'd moved to Vermont. My birthday's in April. And I brought two of my girlfriends from here, Rachel and Ashley, up to Portland to meet you and Kate and Sabrina. And we went on like the boat in Casco Bay that goes to all the islands.
Yeah.
And it was just like, I didn't have my daughter with me, obviously. She was with my mom. So I was like, I'm going to go a little crazy and I don't know. Like,
well, we call Lola the baby shield because when the baby's around, we're good.
Yeah.
And when the baby goes away.
But I think the combination of like day drinking and then me like missing her, I had like a serotonin, like
drop,
negative situation. And I was like so spent by like a day and a half.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's cute. You're like a, a real mom. That's what you are.
Yeah, I'm a real mom. I really am a mom.
And you're real.
But we can talk about my birthday some other time. We want to focus on.
Okay.
And it's your topic tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
I don't even know what it is.
Should we get into it?
Get into it.
Okay. Girl, guys, world, this story has it all. You have no idea. This is the craziest thing I've ever heard of in my life.
Okay. It's wafty.
I just like pumped that up so hard. Okay. My sources are Smithsonian Magazine.
Mm-hmm. That's a good
disaster.
One.
Thank you. Disasters of the Century, Season 3, Episode 4.
Amazing.
Smithsonian Channel, because I did watch some videos on this. This is how crazy this is. Britannica, Wikipedia, and Japan by Web.
We're going back to Japan.
We are. And please forgive me for pronunciation. I actually worked on it this time. Worked on it.
Let's start there. It's not... Okay, how do you pronounce that word?
What?
Pronunciation.
Pronunciation.
It's pronunciation. You keep saying pronunciation. You said it in our last couple episodes. It's pronunciation. It's not pronunciation.
Like a nun? Like pronun?
Pronunciation.
Okay.
But the verb is like to pronounce. But okay. The noun is pronounce.
Well, get ready for a wild ride because I don't think this is going to get any better because we're going to Japan, baby.
Woo! It's not going to get better with the pronunciation.
All right. Here we go. Crazy story. All right. We are taking it to Tokyo, baby.
Nice.
And all right. This is... I'm covering the 1923 earthquake of Kanto.
Okay.
All right. Cool.
Can I just say what, like, okay, you were like, we're doing the 1923 earthquake of Kanto. Like, you just buried it in, like, your voice. Kanto. It was supposed to be like this exciting thing. You're like, we're on a ride, baby. And then you're like, to Kanto.
Oh my God, I'm dying.
To Kanto.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So in Tokyo, Japan, it's surrounded by Tokyo Bay, which is also known as the area of Kanto. So it's like, it covers like the Tokyo Bay area and like surrounding country or cities around it.
Okay.
So this area has one of the highest frequencies of earthquakes in the country. Kanto is located in the Rim of Fire.
Is it Kanto or Kanto?
Kanto. Kanto.
Okay. Because which is it? Is it Kanto?
It's Kanto.
Spell it.
Oh my God. Stop. Okay, Kanto. It's Kanto, and I did watch videos on this, like documentaries. So,
okay, so it's Kanto.
I should have said Kanto. I'm sorry.
Okay, so don't say Kanto.
Ooh, I won't. Okay. Sorry. Oh, already starting. I told you this is like a problem.
You're so bad.
I have like a problem. I'm sorry, you guys. I'm sorry to all you listeners for disappointing you weekly.
We don't have any Japanese listeners, so it's fine.
We don't?
No.
Well, where are you guys? Come on.
Well, they're probably not trying.
How do you
to
know?
Listen to this.
Because of the downloads?
Yeah, we can see what countries we're downloaded in. We've never been downloaded in Japan.
Well, maybe
like
we
Japan.
Will. Yeah, see, you're the
Japan.
You're messing up too. Okay. So, Kanto. Wait. Did I do that again?
Kanto.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so Kanto is located in the Rim of Fire, which we've talked about, which is basically the ring of fire in the Pacific Ocean where earthquakes and volcanic eruptions occur. Mm-hmm. And this includes, you have Japan, New Zealand, the Pacific Islands, And it goes all the way around to Alaska, Washington, Oregon, and then down to California, where the San Andreas Fault is. And it continues to Mexico and Central America. So that's like the Ring of Fire. And so going back to Tokyo in 1923, there's always been like a ton of earthquakes and seismic activity. But for the first 20 years of the 20th century, there was a decline in seismic activity. So, you know, like 1900 to like 1920, there was really nothing going on. And there are fewer earthquakes and fewer opportunities for stress underground to be released. So in 1921 and 1922, there were two earthquakes that occurred, but it only caused like minor damage. And it happened, like the damage happened south of Yokohama, which is like south of Tokyo. It's still on the coast. Mm-hmm. And then it also happened in Tokyo as well. So these two minor earthquakes happened, but like that was pretty much it. Okay. So in 1923, there were about 2.5 million people living in Tokyo. And then south of Tokyo is the Yokohama City. It's also known as the City of Silk. Like a lot of silkworms and all that stuff was there. And
you mean they were making silk?
Yeah, it was known as the City of Silk, where they made silk. And it was also a well-known international port of over 400,000 residents. So like ships were like in and out of this port, you know, again, close to Tokyo, but not Tokyo, like south of it. And then, okay, so Saturday, September 1st, 1923, it's a really sunny day and it's really hot. And there are a few strong winds that are like left over from an overnight strong typhoon. So a typhoon had just like come in and it like passed, but there was like a bunch of winds. So September 1st, 1923 happened to be the first day of the new school term. So things were like really busy in the city. Like all the kids were like, you know, about to go to school. Mm-hmm. And just before noon, businesses and families are lighting charcoal fires in preparation for lunch in Yokohama. So back in 1923, that's what you did. Like, and lunch was a really big deal in Japan. Like, obviously it's a big deal everywhere. Like everyone wants to eat lunch, but
I feel like it's like not a big deal here. Like nobody cares if you eat.
Yeah, maybe not. I guess not.
I feel like so many other countries are like, yeah, during the day, like have lunch. You know, even if you're at the office.
Yeah. Cause like, yeah, I guess it's definitely more tradition, you know, mm-hmm. like, especially at this time, it was like, we eat lunch, like, this is what's happening.
Yeah. Here it's like, eat your sandwich at your desk, you fucking lazy piece of shit. Eat your fucking egg salad sandwich at your desk, or you're an asshole. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't experience that at our office that we worked together. No, like we would go to lunch all the time with our boss and like our other coworkers. Oh my
God. Yeah. He's the best. No, but like, but America's very like, you don't get breaks.
Yeah, it's like you need to
slave at your desk and eat, and you only get 2 days vacation a year.
Yeah. It's like, you get 7.5 vacation days. Yeah. Figure out the half.
Yeah, it's so stupid. So they're all lighting fires for lunch. You know, things are happening. Kids are going to school. Okay, so Yoshiko Miyamitsu, and I did listen to this in the video.
That sounded good.
Thank you. She's 13 years old, and she lives with her family in Yokohama. And in the videos I watched, she was interviewed, and I like quoted this. From the interview, it said, it was an uneventful morning and we were about to eat lunch at home with my grandfather, grandmother, my mother, and three sisters. So she's just like chilling, ready to eat. And then I'm going to a couple different storylines at the same time to like tell you where different people were. So then, mm-hmm. you know, not so far away in Yokohama, a 9-year-old named Sadeo Amano is also home with his grandparents on his family's silkworm farm just south of Tokyo. And he was interviewed and he said it was a Saturday and school was a half day. It was quite warm that day, so we went swimming right beside the house. Also, I found that interesting. So I guess, you know, how like in the Asian culture, like school is very important. Like they had school on a Saturday and he said it was a half day. So I'm like, oh, cool.
So they, that's interesting.
And that was back in the day. So I don't know how it is now, but, so anyway, you know, he was just chilling like, and then went swimming cause it was hot. And then, back in Tokyo, I'm doing again, another storyline. Oniso Emamore, who is just 19 years old. He is just starting his first job working at the post office. And the rest of his family lives in Canada. So he's just like there, like living his life and like working. And then another guy in Tokyo, his name is Professor Assessori Amemamora.
His name is Professor Assessoris Amemamora. Okay, keep going.
Where? I watched the video. I like spelled it out.
I'm sure his name is Professor Assessoris Amemamora. Okay. Continue.
Okay.
A-C-I-S-O-R-I.
A-C-I-S-O-R-I. Okay.
Accessory.
Yeah, that's what I said, right?
Accessory.
Yeah. So he's been studying for years at the University of Tokyo at the Seismological Observatory. And so during this time, he kept saying publicly that he expected a large earthquake to occur in the bay south of Tokyo, and that such an earthquake would cost a huge amount of casualties, and that the casualties would be caused by fires. He was denounced for his claims. So like this professor's been here for like years studying and he's like, there's going to be an earthquake and all, you know, there's going to be all these deaths and they're going to be caused by fires. And everyone's like, I don't know what you're talking about.
That's common with a lot of these.
Yeah. A lot of our disasters. Stories. Yeah.
People exactly. Don't believe anybody.
I know. Okay. So, but at 11:58 AM on the morning of September 1st, 2023, Professor,
1923. Okay, we know. 1923.
I'm dying. Oh my God, my notes.
Not in the future.
Okay. Well, I guess I am. Thank you for catching that. I'm so glad you did, because like all our listeners would have been like, "What?" Okay, Professor.
Dr. Assessoris would have been.
No, it's
way ahead of his time.
It's a memamore. Professor Amemamore, philosophy was about to come true.
Dr. Nemenemi Assessoris. Okay. No one has ever been worse at pronouncing things than you.
Okay. So his philosophy is about to come true. Let's just go there. Okay. So he is actually
his prediction.
He's actually in his office at the university when he feels what appears to be a minor tremor. And 12 seconds later, he realizes it's like way bigger.
Wow.
And as the earthquake progresses, the rooftop begins to fall and the building was shaking like crazy. Wow. So not far away, back at the post office with the 19-year-old Oniso Emamori, he and his fellow workers start running for their lives as the building was shaking. He witnessed a fellow worker who was running behind him and he disappeared between two large cracks and was never seen again.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
No way.
No, this story gets so freaking crazy. Okay. So he's like running away. That's horrible. And then, back at Yoshiko, the 13-year-old who's eating like lunch with her family, which is about like 30 kilometers away from Tokyo. Their home is shaking and pieces of the ceiling are falling everywhere. In the interview that I saw, she, and I quoted, I felt violent shakes to the side. I was really surprised and kept screaming. The walls started to fall down. Doors were moving and things on the shelves were falling. Terrible things were happening. All of the children held hands and went outside, but the ground was cracking. And if we fell into the cracks, we would get stuck. I was crawling, but I kept falling because the shaking was so bad. So wow. Like, even when you're trying to get outside, it's like, you know, obviously that's a smart thing to do if things are falling on you, but like, you know, the ground's cracking.
Yeah.
So basically what was happening is that a 60 by 60 mile segment of the Philippine oceanic plate ruptured the thrust itself against the Eurasian continental plate, releasing a massive burst of tectonic energy. So it was a mega thrust.
Wow. I think you meant continental.
Yeah.
You even said continental.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I'm just going to correct you.
No, I'm correcting you on every time.
Good. I hope you do.
Your birthday. Like, this is your birthday podcast.
Yeah, but like this is every podcast I do.
No, it's not. Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay. So okay. It was a mega thrust. That's our favorite.
Yeah, I know. Okay. So the earthquake measures 8.3 on the Richter scale, but I will say that I did a lot of research and some people or some resources said it was 7.9 on the Richter scale. It was really weird. It was like 8.3 or 7.9. So I couldn't figure it out.
Every time I've done an episode about an earthquake, I think I've done a couple. There's always like a different Richter scale reading on different. I don't know why it varies.
Yeah, me either. And obviously, like, if anything like higher than like, you know, or 7.9 or 8 happens in the ocean, like sometimes like you can't even feel it, but you'll have the tsunamis. But like if you have something like that in a city, it's like detrimental. It's horrible.
Yeah, for sure.
So it was
especially
high
in
enough.
1923. Like what?
Oh my
god!
The
infrastructure like back then.
Well, the horizontal shaking motion wreaks havoc on the wood and concrete buildings of Kanto. So the earthquake was south of Tokyo, and is like if you go further south towards the actual earthquake fault, it was closer to Yokohama. So like Tokyo was like really affected, but Yokohama was like closer to the fault line. So 12% of the homes there had collapsed. So yeah,
wow.
It was really bad. Yeah. So the way Japanese buildings are constructed at this time, they're made of wood, but the roof is made of ceramic tile.
Oh God, no.
Yeah. Horrible. So the swaying.
Beautiful, but not.
Well, yeah, great. Yeah, of course. Of
not
course
great for painful. An earthquake.
Exactly. That's what I meant. Yeah. Like it was swaying and then collapsing like very quickly. So it was horrible. So farms and villages in the countryside also suffer in Yokohama. And so going back to Sato Amano, who is the 9-year-old on the silk farm, he was swimming, you know, near his house with friends when the first tremor hits. And in the interview, he says, at first we couldn't get out. Of course, everyone was trying to get out and get home right away. 90% of the houses were all torn down by the time they got out. So fortunately, after they made it out of the water, Sadeo reunited with his grandparents and older sister, and they were safe. But many others of the countryside did not survive.
Wow. So they couldn't get out of the water they were swimming in?
Yeah, like, you know, the tremor, I think some had reported it anywhere from 4 minutes to 12 minutes.
That's insane.
Yeah, like, way too long. Like, and it was violent.
So just as, like, have you ever been in an earthquake?
No.
So I've been in a couple of them.
Ew, because you lived in Seattle?
I did not live in Seattle.
Where'd you live?
In Portland.
You lived on the West Coast.
No, I didn't experience.
Oh, Portland,
it.
Oregon. That's right.
Yeah, but yeah. I never was in an earthquake there. There was an earthquake in like that when I lived in Vermont when I was in high school. it just hit and like we all felt it and it like shook. I remember it shook my bed and it like woke me up. And then I remember in Portland, Maine, there was an earthquake and it was mild. Really? But yeah. And I was like at my friend's apartment, my friend Hannah, and I was sitting there with like my friend, like our friends, like Guthrie and Sky. And like, we were just watching TV, hanging out, and like our whole building shook. And it lasted a few seconds, but it was the most terrifying. It just felt so crazy and like awful.
Yeah.
We're just so everything scary. Was shaking. And so I can't, like my point being to this side note, I can't imagine being in something like that longer than like a couple seconds.
Oh my God. I know.
Yeah. It really Absolutely. Is very, really scary. Even if it's just like 3 seconds where just your whole building is shaking.
Yeah. And you just experience shaking, not like cracks where right. people are falling into them and like never seen again. Like what the hell? Like that's not even cool.
I have a lot of cousins in San Diego and they've been through earthquakes their whole life and they are just so used to them. Like we're used to snowstorms here. Mm. So I'm not trying to sound like, you know, there's many people that know what it's like to like go through an earthquake, but if you've ever really been through one, it's really,
yeah,
just so intense.
Yeah. My sister was in one in LA recently, like 2 years or maybe a year ago, 2 years ago. She said it was the scariest thing. And it was like a really small one, but she was in a high rise and she like things were falling off and she was like, I'm not going to make it.
That's so scary.
Hell no.
Especially being a high rise.
No. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Okay. So down at the docks of Yokohama, like I said, it was like a well-known international port. It's Japan's biggest port actually. And it's the gateway to the West. Hundreds of well-wishers were seeing off the Empress of Australia, which was a 615-foot luxury steamship bound for Vancouver. So like literally this like ship's about to take off. It's like all luxurious or whatever. And people are like there to wave them off. And then all of a sudden they witness the earthquake. And I have a quote. It said, the smiles vanished, remembered Ellis M. Zacharias, then a young U.S. naval officer who was standing on the pier when the earthquake hit. And for an appreciable instance, everyone stood transfixed by the sound of unearthly thunder. So moments later, a tremendous jolt knocked Zacharias off his feet and the pier collapsed, spilling cars and people into the water.
Oh my
so
God.
So this ship is like about to take off and they're like, hey guys, bye. You know, and then all of a sudden, wow. like it happens in front of their face. And like, there's actually during my research, I saw a bunch of like accounts from this ship, like just like watching this whole thing go down. So it was like really crazy. Okay. So far we have an earthquake. Horrible. Mm-hmm. Now we have a mudslide.
Mm.
So along the coast, cliffs are breaking out in giant slabs that are 100 feet thick, and an entire village is buried in a massive mudslide. Huge. Okay, so like this whole thing, yeah, gets buried. Then a huge tsunami comes. It's 40 feet high. It washes away dozens of villages and kills like hundreds of people. And then some areas like, you know, after the tsunami, like, you know how the ocean rises and like goes up into the city. It's like some were 10 feet. Some of it had reached like 10 feet in, some had reached 30 feet in and like just took out villages. Mm-hmm. Horrible.
Yeah. And back then they didn't really have a warning system.
No, not at all.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they knew about tsunamis obviously, but.
Yeah. Okay. So we got a mudslide. We got a tsunami. Horrible things are happening.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's where it gets crazy. Okay. So you know how everyone was like cooking lunch at the time?
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was using charcoal to like cook the lunch? Well, the root, like, so this is like going back to the interview of Yoshiko, who is 13 years old, having the lunch with the grandparents, like crawling outside, freaking out. She said, when the roof collapsed, the fire started immediately. So this is not just for her. This is the entire city.
So people's
houses on fire
collapsed onto their charcoal burning.
Yes. And I'm not talking just their house, like the entire city.
Right. Oh, no.
The initial earthquake shatters the city's water main pipelines, which was horrible for having ways to fight fires. So like the pipelines are done, like there's nothing to fight these fires. It also ruptures underground gas lines. So here we are, like this earthquake shatters like all these buildings and now we have fires everywhere. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, like the structures are built of wood.
Well,
and
then which is tile ceilings. That's very common with earthquakes too. Like modern day earthquakes, they always have fires because they rupture gas lines and stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So, so now both Tokyo and Yokohama, there's hundreds of fires. And they're burning out of control and people are trying to escape. So people start moving in directions of open spaces, which typically is smart, the smart thing to do. But in this case, it's like a death trap because there's so many fires. And when you go into, like, if there's all these fires around you and you go into an open space and you think you're like, okay, I'm doing the right thing, then the fires start their own firestorm. Okay, so.
Okay.
Listen, it gets intense. So, near Honjo district of Tokyo, the chief of police starts directing a large mass of people who are trying to escape the fires. He directs over 40,000 people. Because remember, this is like a really populated area and they're all freaking out. Everything's down. Now these fires are going everywhere. He directs 40,000 people to take refuge in this open space of a military clothing depot.
A military clothing depot? What the fuck is
it's that? Like, it's it. Well, it's actually a desert. It was like a big warehouse, essentially, at the time.
Of military clothes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, so that's not an open space. That's like a building.
Well, it was enough space to fit a ton of people.
But it wasn't an open, so it wasn't an outdoor open space.
No, it wasn't outdoor.
It wasn't like a field. It was like
get into this space. Yeah, but it was huge. It was huge. It was kind of like going into a stadium, essentially. And a lot of these people had brought clothing and furniture and anything they could recover from houses because that was like all they had left.
Say furniture?
Yeah.
They brought their furniture.
No, not like, you know what I mean? Like they gathered anything they had,
they wouldn't bring furniture. They had like 4 seconds. Well,
they were like recovering things out of people's like houses that they didn't even have. Like, this is what I read. Like people were desperate. They were like, let me grab this and that so I could have it for later because they're all trying to survive.
Let me grab my dining room table so I can have it for later.
No, you know what I mean? Like pillows or like, you know, stuff like that. Like, yeah. And so like they're just trying to grab any.
Nobody grab furniture to go into the big building.
No, but crazy. Like, it's not like, I guess furniture is the wrong word, but I'm saying like they were grabbing anything like household.
Like belongings, like personal belongings.
Yeah, but it said furniture in the thing. It's 1923. That's weird. Don't know what they're doing.
Like
yeah.
A chair maybe or like.
I don't know. Because like they were like, we have nothing left. Like the place was already destroyed, right? And now there's fires and now they're like, okay, let's go into this big, big space. And the chief of police is like, go here, you'll be safe. Great.
Okay.
So now the sky around the area becomes superheated and black. And out of the sky forms a fire tornado.
What?
Have you ever heard of this in your life?
Yes, I have.
I've never heard of this and I am dead.
I have heard of this, but I don't remember.
So, yeah. So a fire tornado comes out. It's spawned out of the fires, like the surrounding fires, and it's hot enough to melt metal. It has winds of hurricane force, and it's superheated. And superheated updrafts of air. Mm-hmm. It's 650 feet high and almost 1,000 feet across, and comes right for this space, and it wipes them all out in 15 minutes.
Wait, so is this because it was like windy and like all of these buildings were on fire? So like the wind came through the city on fire, and like,
I will tell you.
And it killed all these people, you said, like right away.
It killed 40,000 people in 15 minutes.
What?
In this space. I swear to God, I told you the story has it all. It's crazy. Okay, so a firestorm is basically formed by intensity that, so it like, okay, hold on. It's like, so when you have heat, like a bunch of heat in one space, it creates its own wind system, mm-hmm. and it can form a fire whirl, or also it's called a fire devil, sometimes referred to as a fire tornado, which I'm calling that. And it's a whirlwind induced by fire, and often composed of or flame or ash. These start with a whirl of wind, often made visible by smoke, and may occur when intense rising heat and turbulent wind conditions combine to form whirling eddies of air. These eddies can contract a tornado-like vortex that sucks in debris and combustible gases. So this happens as the city is burning down. Sorry, can you hear that?
Yeah.
My husband's calling.
Oh, answer it. On the podcast, answer it. Put it on speaker.
Can you hear us? You're on our podcast right now. We're recording.
Sam. Can you hear us?
Hello? We have no reception. Can you hear us? Oh. Hello? All right. I'll call you after we're done recording.
Yeah.
Okay. Love you.
He's like, oh yeah, one of them.
Well, I was like, oh, he's calling during my podcast.
I love it.
I love him, but okay. So yeah, so like a fire tornado like forms because there's so much heat and they're in this space, and it creates this tornado and it like kills them all.
So 40,000 people died in this building.
Yeah.
Oh my fucking God. They were like incinerated.
Incinerated. So I'm going to read what I wrote.
It's not funny, Kat.
No, I was just saying, just cut all of this out, please. That's
don't
not, I
laugh laughing. At this.
I wasn't laughing at her.
You just laughed.
No, I was laughing. It was like, I'm going to read what I wrote. Okay. So it's 650 feet high, almost 1,000 feet across, and it comes right for these people in the military clothing depot space, and it's spinning at 125 miles per hour. And because the people had brought like whatever they could get, like the whatever they could find, because they thought they were going to survive and like get out of this alive, and like had brought like clothing and like, you know, pieces of whatever they could, like that incinerated, that like meat, that like God. Got fuel to the fire too. Yeah, so when it was bad.
So like they did bring their furniture, and it's one of the reasons that it burned.
Some of them, it wasn't like furniture, it wasn't like a couch. Like, you know, they like, they brought like, you know, pillows or anything they could like get, because like they were devastated. They like had nothing. And the whole, everywhere they looked, there was nothing. There was no homes. There was nothing. So they were like, let me
grab. Made it worse.
So much worse. So like, yeah. So yeah. I'll just read what I wrote. These belongings that the people brought have become fuel for the fire tornado that is coming right at them. The fires engulf them and there are no survivors. Over 40,000 people die in just 10 minutes, actually.
That is not so 15. fucking crazy.
Yeah, so that is crazy. Ridiculous. I have never heard of this in my life. First of all, I never even knew what a fire tornado happened.
I've heard of fire tornadoes, but I've never heard of this. This is insane.
Yeah, we have a mudslide. We have a tsunami. Oh my God. We have a fire tornado. This is so bad. So going back to the post office worker, Aniso Emamore, he's outside at this point in Tokyo. He is running and trying to stay ahead of the flames. His daughter is interviewed and said he saw this girl that was like 8 years old and she was crying and he thought maybe he could go help her, but the crowd was pushing him. Like he was running with the crowd and the crowd was pushing him so bad that like he couldn't get to her. And that's like one of the things he remembers. It's like a really sad, like 8 year old girl, like alone and crying.
That's horrible.
Yeah. Many are trying to cross the canals, in Yokohama and, they are like all wooden bridges, but fires are like on both sides. And in some places at this time, there were enough places in the canals for survivors to cross corpses without getting their feet wet.
Oh my.
That's how bad it was. Like there were so many dead bodies in the water at this point already that people were just like running from the fires and like could just walk across the canals without getting wet.
Like a bridge. Like mm-hmm. This is how lucky you and I are. And most people probably listening to this, that we've never had to cross a river where so many people are already dead. We can just like walk over them.
Yeah.
Because of
it's so bad. Yeah.
Like, yeah. The time that we were born, the decade or.
I mean, but this could happen to us now.
No, I know. But it's like, it's just. I mean, that's probably never going to happen to you or me in our lifetime. We live in a place but that's just so crazy.
Yeah. So bad. Yoshiko Mayamitsu, who's the 13-year-old, again, the girl we started out with having lunch with her family, like outside cracks, lots of things going on. Back to her interview, she said there were bodies floating all over. And as the waves would come and go, bodies would move. I was just stunned when I saw it. It was all rotten and it smelled awful.
Oh my God.
She and her family took another direction than most of the crowd, which was interesting. So a lot of people were fleeing to those open spaces. Thank God they didn't because of the fire tornado. She said, I took my younger sisters and all of us escaped to a small hill at the other side of a small river. And at the top of the hill, we spent the night. There was nothing to eat and wear and no beddings. And so she said, for my research. So after the first huge tremor, over 100 aftershocks occurred that day. And some were almost as strong as the first.
Wow.
So, like, this thing, like, can you imagine, like, a 12-minute earthquake, like, ruins your life?
I can't imagine.
And then you have aftershocks, 100 aftershocks that day? No.
Yeah, no, no. I can't.
Yeah.
Imagine that. It's crazy. No.
So, all utilities in the city, like telegraphs at that time and power lines were immediately cut off. I mean, and then we already talked about the water mains are, done. There's no way to like fight the fires. The gas lines are broken. So it's horrible. It's like, it's like hell. It's actual hell. And Yokohama Harbor, the steamship Korea, which is another steamship that was there. It tries to send a distress signal to the governor of Tokyo and there's no reply. So there's like no communication. So Tokyo and like everybody's like, there were also like, because it was such a huge harbor, there's other ships that like witnessed this whole thing go down. And thank God they were there because they were like aid to a bunch of people to get out of the city and somewhere else. So the next day, survivors are seeking refuge at the coastline. You know, they're getting rescued. Sunday, the 2nd, 1923, the fires are still burning in Tokyo and Yokohama and surrounding areas. Those who survived the night look for ways to get out. The population was at 2.5 million in Tokyo, and now it was only 1.25 million.
Wow.
Yeah. And a lot of, like, yeah. So during the interview, Yoshiko says, when I came back, so this is, the 13-year-old girl at the time who stayed in the night in the hill. When I came back the next day, there were almost no houses and everything was burnt. I noticed a person who had gotten stuck in a crack in the ground, and the fire came and they burnt to death. It was totally black.
My God.
Yeah. And actually, like, there's other notes I wrote that I have. I'm just trying to find it right now. But I did read that a lot of people, because the ground was so hot, a lot of people, their feet got like molted into the ground and they died that way too. Like, yeah, it was like, just everything was so on fire that like people just,
they were trying to run and they like just down the street and they couldn't because their feet got,
it was too hot. Stuck. Yeah.
Oh, that's awful. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Horrifying.
Sadao Amano, 9 years old, the guy, the little kid swimming, mm-hmm. he said after 2 or 3 days, the water shut off. Then grandfather said, you better go down to the village to somebody who has a well and go get water for us. So that is what I did for the first week, carrying water home. So luckily he survived. It was just interesting to like watch him being interviewed, like surviving it as a young mm-hmm. kid and like, you know, going through it. So I wanted to include that. So in Tokyo and Yokohama, stores, hospitals, and government officials no longer exist. The damage is $4.5 billion.
Wow.
Which is a lot. 95% of all structures were lost due to the fires. So like, that was so interesting that like the earthquake did so much damage, but the fires are what killed it all, mm-hmm. basically. The death toll is estimated as high as 140,000. There were thousands of bodies, many unidentified, who were like buried in cremation pits, which is really sad.
It is sad when these things happen and there's just like a mass grave and your loved ones. Yeah, yeah. Like can't have your body for their
own. I hate that. And there were about 1 million people homeless.
Wow.
So not only did these people die, there's 1 million people homeless after this.
Japan just really, just because of where they are, geographically, being right on the edge of the rim of fire, it just like the ring or the rim, it just sucks. Mm-hmm. They have the worst. And like, I think in one of our other episodes, I was describing the geography of Japan, and it's like this like long country and it's really mountainous in the interior, and so like most of its population is collected in these coastal towns and cities. Mm-hmm. So when they have earthquakes and tsunamis, it's that much more devastating because there's such dense population.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah. That's like, that's a lot of people to, I mean, 1 million people homeless.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? I can't even imagine. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's awful. Like this story is so crazy. So the US, Britain, France, and a few other countries came to Japan's aid with medical supplies, food, and shelter. Thank God. So Yoshiko, again, 13-year-old, I have to like keep saying that because I'm going in and out of stories. She said an American ship came with supplied blankets, one blanket per two people. So that's what you would get. Until then, we didn't have anything to cover us. Our hair was all wet every morning due to the dew. But after blankets were given, we put them over our heads. Like, I just, can you imagine going through that at 13? Like, I just,
no,
I cannot.
I can't.
Yoshiko's family eventually builds a new home in their old neighborhood, but some residents, like Anitsu Amamore, who is the 19-year-old post office worker, has to move and rebuild his life in Canada where the rest of his family lived. And like, yeah, do that, please. Go, I mean, go to your family in Canada.
I hope I hope it was good for him and it was okay and he could get there and, you know, it was a good thing.
Yeah, me too.
We don't know.
I hope so too.
I hope Canada treated him well.
Oh, Canada's like the nicest country in the world.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying like racially. I'm saying like, I hope it worked out for him where he was able to like... Canadians are nice. Yeah,
they're but seriously, every Canadian I've ever met in my life is like the nicest person.
Wow.
So this disaster founded a new way of engineering for future earthquakes, both in Japan and in the world. There was like a large conference after this earthquake. I think it was like a few years after, but the whole world came together and was like, it was a discussion on the issues of seismic design. Yeah, the world. So it was like a big discussion whether buildings should be flexible or stiff. Obviously, they should be flexible. The Great Earthquake was a turning point for Japanese people. And during the slow rebuild, they changed all new constructions to earthquake-proof and fireproof buildings. So now, September 1st in Japan is called the Day of Disaster Prevention. It's like a holiday.
Oh, wow.
And it reminds the Japanese to, let me see. I wrote it down. Hold on. Let me see. Since 1960, September 1st, it's been designated by the Japanese government as Disaster Prevention Day, or a day of remembrance of and to prepare for major natural disasters, including tsunamis and typhoons, drills, as well as knowledge promotion events that are centered around the date, as well as awards and ceremonies to people of merit.
Wow.
And that is the crazy story of the 1923 Kanto earthquake.
Holy shit. I knew there was a really terrible earthquake in Japan in the 20s, but I did not know anything about this. And I did not know there was a fire tornado.
Yeah.
That is insane.
I didn't even know that was the thing. And actually, like, I feel bad because I was supposed to add this into my notes, but can I tell you a couple things?
Mm-hmm.
So the landslide I was speaking of, I kind of mentioned it, but it's a thing. Obviously, the landslide was in the western Kanagawa Prefecture, which is like, it's basically the village of Nubakawa, and 800 people died there, which is like nothing to look over. So mm-hmm. I wanted to like make sure I mentioned that because it's really bad and horrible.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a big landslide. And like in the same location, there was a major train station, that was there. And, I'm just going to read you this. So during the Great Kanto earthquake at 3 minutes before noon, September 1st, 1923, the local train of Adamai Odawara line was traveling south towards Manazura and was stopped at Nubakawa station. The earthquake caused a mudslide, which covered the station, sweeping the station building platforms and train into the ocean, 45 meters down the slope on which the station was built. The Type 960 locomotive and the first 7 cars in the train were submerged, with only the 8th car remaining above water. The train disaster killed 112 people, with an additional 200 people living in the close vicinity of the station also killed by the landslide. The wreck of the train and tracks were salvaged and September 1932 for scrap metal. So yeah, wow, that happened. But then listen to this, the Tokyo bound train on the same line, like right before this, was stopped in the middle of the bridge over the Napakawa River just before the station, because it saw that the mudslide had taken out the station. Mm-hmm. And so it stopped, and it was overwhelmed by the 35-foot tsunami, which swept the locomotive into the sea, killing six people.
My God.
Yeah. This, like, this earthquake was a fucking nightmare.
That's awful.
Nightmare. Fire, tornado, tsunami, mudslide, fires, earthquake. Yeah, and
it's all very much the geography of Japan. Also, yeah. I remember this from the episode I did, prefectures.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. Prefectures. You just said it, but they're like, it's like basically like counties.
Oh, okay.
It's like just, it's just how the country, like Japan is divided into, it was like 40 something prefectures, I remember.
Yeah.
So that's what you're talking about.
I honestly, when I read fire tornado, I was like, what? No, that's not true. And you know, I've actually kind of seen one myself, like a very small scale, like
a fire tornado.
Yeah. Like, have you ever been like outside, like with a bonfire, and you saw like a burst of wind come and it just kind of spun it up a little bit? Do you know what I'm saying?
Maybe. I don't know.
I've seen that before, but like, it never like occurred to me that it could be an actual, like, to scale.
Have you seen the movie Backdraft with Kurt Russell and fucking Billy Baldwin?
But I should. I love Kurt Russell so much.
First of all, if you haven't seen that masterpiece of American cinema.
What's it called?
Backdraft.
Oh my God. Tell me all about it. What's going on?
Okay. I used to watch it with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
Because my dad, when I was little, was it like during the winter, it's like 6 month winters here in Vermont. He was a groomer at one of the local ski mountains. So like, he would work all night and sleep half the day. And then he would be like just hanging out at during the day with me and my brother, sometimes my other brother too. And we used to watch this movie Backdraft all the time. And this is like back in the day when like you just had cable and if you paid extra for HBO.
Oh.
So this movie, it's Kurt Russell, who is like one of my favorites. Yeah, you know Kurt Russell.
Oh my God, I love him.
Yeah.
Overboard, then, like, is my favorite movie. And
yes. He's amazing.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And then Billy Baldwin, one of the Baldwin brothers, one of Alex's brothers.
Oh.
They play brothers and they're firefighters, I think in Chicago. And there's this like, you know, so there's like this arsonist who's setting fires, but there's also this like weird thing that keeps happening in buildings in Chicago, like warehouses and other commercial spaces where there's like a fire tornado inside.
Oh my God.
And they combat it. And you have to watch this movie. It's so good.
Backdraft. Okay.
It's so fucking good. I'm obsessed with it. Oh my God.
I love Kurt Russell so much. I will take you up on this.
He's so hot. He's like lives in like a houseboat on stilts, like that isn't even in the water. Ugh. I don't know why.
He's always so hot. Even when he's older, he's hot. I'm like,
yeah. And like Billy Baldwin is like his little brother that like, oh my God. And like when they were little kids, their dad took them to, their dad was a firefighter and took them to a fire, and their dad died in the fire and they saw him die.
No.
So they have this horrible, like, they have this like PTSD, like we want to do what like dad did, but like also like he traumatized us with.
Why would you want to do that after that?
Oh, and like Bridget Fonda's in it. Do you remember her? The actress.
Of course I do. Yeah. It's,
you do? And it's like so
I know
good.
Bridget Fonda. Come
you
on.
Do? I just feel like people never remember her. Like my favorite movie of all time is called Shag, and she's in that.
Oh my God. No, I'm an 80s girl.
I mean, kind of. You're like 1985. You were like five.
Yeah.
In 1990.
No, but I'm still like mid 80s. It's cool. Now I'm thinking of the fire movie that I'm obsessed with.
What?
It's like my favorite movie. I don't know why. Okay. What is it called? Oh my God.
Google it. It's about fire.
No, come on. Okay.
There's no greater movie about firefighting than Backdraft. I just want everybody.
Okay. Mine's a little cheesy, but it's so good. And you know what it is. And
what
it's
is
like,
it?
Oh my God. Okay. Do you remember when that young kid communicates with his dad via radio frequency, but his dad dies in the fire and his mom was killed by a serial killer? His mom was a nurse. Come on. You know this movie. What? Oh, like, my God.
Okay. I'm Googling it.
Okay. I know it. It's like one of my favorite movies.
Kid communicates.
And I actually have it on VHS, except I have no VHS anymore.
Over the radio, who died in the fire.
Yes. Kid, I'm going to do it too.
I don't have no idea.
Dad, over radio, fire, movie. I'm going to tell you that. Frequency. It's called Frequency.
Oh, okay. So this is in 2000.
Oh yeah. It's literally makes me cry every time. It's so good.
Who is in it?
And, oh my God. You know the people.
Might. Frequency.
Okay.
I've never seen this.
What? Oh my God. Watch it tonight.
Okay. Already. It's like the weird guy from like.
So basically,
it's Dennis Quaid. Oh, it's it. I was gonna say it's Jim Caviezel from like Mel Gibson's creepy movie about.
Yeah, but
Jesus.
Dennis Quaid is the
Dennis
dad.
Quaid's cool. Sean. Okay, I've heard of this. Yeah.
Oh my God, it's so good. It is so good. There's like serial killing, which I love. Like not in real life, but I like it. And there's Dennis Quaid, which is cool.
Cool. Oh, Michael Cera's in it when he was
10. I know. Oh my God. And it makes me cry every time. I just love this movie, but there's a lot of fires involved because the dad's a firefighter. But it's basically like, have you ever seen Sliding Doors?
With Gwyneth Paltrow.
Mm-hmm.
I think like one time, but I don't even remember it when I was younger.
I liked that movie and it's kind of like a Sliding Doors situation. It was like kind of a what if movie. Which I know can be like overdone, but this is like one of my favorites and it's like an old school one. So you got to watch it. It's really, really good. And I think the first scene is filmed in Bucksport, Maine.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. Like the fires in Bucksport.
Oh my God. This actor, Jim Caviezel, he creeps me out so bad.
Yeah. He's really good in it though.
Oh, what was the Mel Gibson movie he was in? It was like Christ of the.
Oh, power, like the Jesus one?
The Power of the Christ.
Oh God, I didn't even
like
watch
Christ
that.
Is great. Christ. I'm just Googling Christ. Mel.
I don't know.
This whole episode is like just us Googling some Christ Mel Gibson.
I know. This whole episode.
The Passion
like,
of the Christ.
Oh Which God! I never watched that. No, I will not. I will not. I heard it was scary. I heard really religious people even thought it was
Mel
like,
Gibson's
scary.
Fucking crazy.
Yeah, Braveheart was Goldberg fucking says. Good though. Braveheart was really good. I'm sorry.
That was before, and like then he like went nuts. He's
what do you mean?
Psycho. Mel Gibson went insane. You don't know about this?
I do, but like, I don't know. I don't know why like I didn't follow.
He like got pulled over for drunk driving, like I think in Florida or something. And he was like talking, he was like calling out all the Jews.
No.
And he was like, he called the female police officer that pulled him over sugar tits.
Ew.
And also why? he left his ex-girlfriend or ex-wife because he has an ex-wife with like 9 children. And then he had another ex-wife and he like sent her, he like left her all of these voicemails being like, I'm gonna like have like 9 black guys rape you, you piece of shit. Like he like went crazy.
That's
you didn't
so
know
bad.
About this?
No.
No. And like Jodie Foster and like Whoopi Goldberg defended him, but it's like, who even cares what they have to fucking say about life? Yeah, he's like nuts.
Yeah.
And there's just been other people that have come out that have worked with him that have been like, he's crazy. You seriously?
I've definitely heard that, like, he's not like,
he's crazy. Like, he's,
yeah, like, he's, no, I've heard that for
not
sure.
Well. And then he made this horrifying movie about, he's like really religious.
Yeah.
But he like,
that's crazy to me. Yeah. I mean, I never saw that movie. That's nothing I will ever watch, but, he was great in Braveheart and he was good in a lot of, old school movies.
You know what my favorite movies when I was a kid, have you ever seen The Man with No Face or like The Man Without a Face? I think it's called The Man Without a Face.
I have not.
So it's like Mel Gibson. It takes place in Maine. I think he is like a teacher who was in a horrifying car accident where his wife died. So he has like a fucked up face. It's like takes place in like the 50s.
It sounds
it's
really
so
familiar.
Good and horrible and like heartbreaking and amazing.
Aww.
So that's my other movie recommendation to you.
Well, thank you. No, I mean, that sounds great.
Or you could watch Passion of the Christ tonight.
No, that would no. Never.
The Passion of Christ.
No, but Frequency is good if you want to see a fire movie.
We're circling back to Frequency.
I know, but it is a little cheesy. I'm not gonna lie.
Of course it is, but you know what isn't cheesy? Backdraft.
Okay, I'll watch that.
So,
yeah, I just liked Frequency because that had serial killer shit in it. Because like all I do is watch IDTV. And if for the international people, I don't know if you guys have that, but it's basically where you watch like serial killers and murders every day. It's not like I want to do that or even support it. It's just like I'm into true crime. So
I had this weird urge halfway through the podcast to watch the newer seasons of Unsolved Mystery on Netflix as I fall asleep.
Oh,
but like I don't normally.
Wait, is there a newer one?
No, there's still two seasons, but I don't normally like to like fall asleep to like fucked up shit because I get scared, but like I kind of want to fall asleep to it. I feel the soothing sounds. It's like the ocean of the theme song soothing me.
I know. I don't know why I'm just like really into it. Oh my God. Guess what? So Sam's mom got me a birthday present and it's 2 tickets to the shooting range, and I hate guns, but I'm gonna do it.
Wow. Did she did you tell her something that
no.
you need to learn how to shoot guns?
I think no. Well, I told her like a while ago that I have no idea. And I really hate guns. I even hate balloons popping.
It's funny like, too, like
yeah.
Like if you wanted to learn how to shoot guns, just like come here. There's like 10 people that would teach you.
Yeah. Well, so Sam owns a gun and it scares the shit out of me. I hate it. It's like in her bedroom, like hidden. And I don't like it. I don't even like it in her room. Like I just don't. But I have no idea. Like if someone were to come in, if I were to get robbed or something, like if murdered, I don't know. Like I have no idea how to use it. So I think it's a really good thing. And I think it was a really good present. It's nothing I would have ever bought for myself, but so I guess I'm going to go and learn, but I'm scared. I don't like them, but I think it's a good skill to have. Like, and you know, even if it's not just like his gun, like just to know how to load one and like deal with it, I think is a good thing. I mean, yeah, I really hate it, but I'm actually really appreciative and love it. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, you never know, I guess.
Yeah.
And you're going to need to use a gun.
Yeah. Oh, wait, one more thing I want to tell you.
Yeah.
I don't know if I already told you this, but my neighbor came over and she bought me an artichoke.
Oh. Because you love artichoke.
I know.
That's so cute.
She wrapped it.
Oh my God.
She was like, I got you something. And I was like, oh, what? And I opened it up and I was like, oh my God. And it was an artichoke. It was so funny.
For all the listeners out there, Kat loves to make a steamed artichoke, but she's almost like burned her apartment down before.
Oh my God, so many times. But I make it every night. I make it every night.
So I tried to make one time and like in honor of you like a couple months ago. And I was like, what? Why is this fun? It's like so much work to eat it.
No, because you, like it like slows down your eating.
But it's like, I just didn't, it was like, okay.
It's like a salad. You like take a piece at a time. You like grab a leaf, scrape off the meat. You'd like dip it.
I don't know. I wasn't into it, but.
Yeah. I have one every night and everyone makes fun of me.
It's so good for you though. So it's like a good habit you have.
It's kind of like my salad, you know, but like, it was just so funny when she was like, happy birthday. And I opened it up and it's like a freaking artichoke.
Oh my God. She's such an enabler. Oh,
so funny.
She's enabling like, you to great. Like burn your apartment building down.
Oh, that was only artichoke. A couple times. I mean,
she probably doesn't even know about that.
No, she does. She jokes with me all the time. She's like, I could smell your artichoke last night.
Oh
my like,
God.
I know. I mean, I try like, yeah, the water goes down really fast. It absorbs the water fast.
Well, you have so to be paying careful. Attention. You can't go.
I am paying attention most of the time, but sometimes I'm like, I'll be like working and like waiting for my artichoke. And I'm like, oh crap. Yeah. I can smell it like burning. And I'm like, ugh, not again. And so I like, you know, just scrub the pan after, but
that's dangerous.
Well, anyways, thank you for joining me on this episode.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Kat.
Thanks, girl.
How old are you now? Are you going to say?
37, bitch.
Ooh, a young 37. You don't That's look a right. day over 26. That's
right. You're right. Yeah. No, I'm feeling good. I feel actually, you know, 30s are the best because you really start to come into your own and you stop giving a fuck, honestly.
You start to come into your own and not giving a fuck, and then you also start to have paralyzing anxiety about the fact that like you still don't know what your like purpose in life is.
Yeah. But that's absolutely true, but I don't know, for some reason recently I've been kind of like okay with where I'm at, so I'm good. Like,
well, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you should be. You have a good life.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, I'm just like really glad that like a lot of my, you know, I'm just kind of like, I don't care if you don't like me. I don't care, you know, like in that way, I'm just kind of like, I like myself. So
if you best don't, advice you could give to a younger person would be, I don't care if you like me. I'm still going to like live my life and
yeah,
do what I want to do. Cause people, yeah, I think, you know, obviously kids and teenagers, but people in their 20s, they care too much about what other people think and you can't really care.
Yeah.
Have to do your own thing. So we hope to record another episode soon.
Yeah.
And this was Kat's special birthday episode.
Yeah. I was like, hey, do you want to record tonight? She's like, it's your birthday. I was like, yeah. So this is awesome.
Yeah. But you had a great night. You got to see some amazing acoustic.
Oh my God. It was so fun. No, this was great. And I hope you enjoyed the episode. And don't forget, we have merch and leave us a great review if you like us. It would be helpful.
Yeah.
And we love you.
All right. I think we can call it a night.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Happy birthday, our cat.